Welcome to another episode of Impact Matters, a thought leadership series hosted by Autodesk, where we invite senior leaders across the globe and Asia to have a conversation across different topics that really matters as we think about reimagining the future. My name is Harish Kupchandani, and I'm the Vice President for Autodesk here at Asia Pacific. Today we explore another topic, very important on a lot of our minds and a lot of discussions that are happening across the globe. Is tokenism impacting or preventing the growth of gender diversity in the commercial and business environments? And when I talk about tokenism, I think about tokenism from the point of a tick in the box exercise, or something that we do for the sake of it, not because we believe it, but because we are measured against it, or we have a metric to it, or because the world turns around and peer pressure and pressure from different aspects of businesses and governments and society and boards that force us to do something. And through my experience, you know, gender diversity is an incredibly important aspect of how we think about building businesses and how we think about growing businesses. Research from McKinsey has also shown that organizations that have boards that are in the top quartile of gender diversity also outperform in terms of the profitability of these organizations. But yet, despite a lot of research and a lot of data that's out there, we still lag in terms of representation of female senior leadership, and we lag in many aspects, but especially in Asia Pacific, and we lag behind the US, Europe, and even in Africa. So there is a massive opportunity as we as a region grow for us to embrace diversity, gender being one part of it. There's a broader aspect of diversity that we will also discuss. But in this instance, in gender diversity, there's an opportunity for us to embrace this in very meaningful ways. So with me today, I'm really proud to welcome my guest, Jana Marley Zeskova. Jana is the CEO and founder of a company called Mero. And Mero basically is a data platform company that helps marketers harness the power of both commercial and consumer data. And she's also the co-founder and CEO of She Loves Data, one of my favorite organizations that I've gotten to understand, that basically invests in helping train women in technology and data. And she's expanded this vision across the globe and today has presence in Asia, Europe, and the US, having trained more than 8,500 women across the globe. So I'm really proud to have Jana here. Jana, thank you for joining us and being with us here today. Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here and I'm really looking forward to the discussion.
Same here. Share with us a little bit about your journey, who you are, and then, you know, let's take it from there.
Well, my story started as a political refugee in Sweden when I was 18.
Wow, okay.
And this was in the 80s. And because of an inspirational teacher at that time, I chose to study computer science, and which I majored in, and I went to continue my studies in the US. And somehow I, as well, to compensate, I study management and marketing and ended up in more marketing-oriented roles in tech companies with a little sideway to manage Estée Lauder, a cosmetic company in Central Europe.
Nice.
So it was at that time when I understood that you don't need to have linear career. You know, you can do little sidekicks and that's okay. Although those little sidekicks and side jobs, they get you to situations where you need to explain yourself. So I remember after being, you know, a country head for Estée Lauder in Czech Republic, I joined back. At that time, it was Sybase as a regional marketing director. And I remember that I had to explain myself, what do I do, you know, here in the tech industry after I've been selling lipsticks? So this was the, you know, like the general welcome. Hey, this is Jana. She's been kind of selling and supporting lipsticks. And what are you doing here, kind of, yeah. And at that time, and this is like 90s, right? So I was usually, it was the usual kind of situation where I entered a room and I was the only woman there. And not only was I the only woman, but I was extremely young for the position I was holding. But for me, it was just to work a little bit harder and to prove not only everyone out there, but especially myself, that I'm okay, I'm worth it, I, you know, can do those positions. So that was the beginning. And then I stayed in tech for the next few decades. And at a certain point, I realized that, you know, being in a position as a one of the three female country managers for another large software company, and the rest 45 male country managers, that I realized that there are a certain situations where, you know, I am a anomaly or outlier, and this was not necessarily always a bad thing. But then throughout the career, it started to turn into an advantage, because at least people remembered me, that was clear. And because I didn't look at failure as something that is bad, you know, at least I go and try, and if this is not working, I can always go back and do something else. And this mindset was then something that I applied to bring more women into, you know, the tech industry, into more senior positions.
What an amazing story. I think when I grow up, I want to be like you if I have a chance.
Well, you know, it was not all shiny, happy.
No, I'm sure.
There were situations where, you know, I would go back and say like, okay, let's redo this.
You talk about failure. You talk about confronting biases that exist. You talk about mindset, you know, which
exactly.
is where it starts from. So let's unpack that a little bit. But before we do, this concept of tokenism and its impact on gender diversity, do you think that's real and prevalent today, despite all the conversations going on around gender diversity?
Look, I would start with saying that it's great that we have these conversations.
Agree.
So that's a first very positive start, because 10 years ago, we didn't even talk about it.
Correct.
And if we did, we didn't even know how to approach this topic, right?
Correct.
So I think this is where the tokenism started. So, okay, let's have equal approach for men and women. So if we say that there is a rule that we bring, you know, equal amount of women and men to the table for whatever reason, it's going to be easier. And if you asked me some years ago, I would say, look, this is no good, because it's going to play bad on the women, because they will be pointed at, and there will be always the question, is she here because she's capable, or is she here because she actually has to be here for complying to all those rules? But having a various different conversations in the last few years, and one of them we had it together
recently,
I actually realized that it's a very good and very practical start. It is very good to have some rules to change the mindset of people. Because if we don't, in a certain situations, bring in those rules saying, hey, shouldn't we change that? Shouldn't we have equal amount of candidates for interviews from both genders, or all genders that we have today? Wouldn't it be more interesting result at the end, without then at the end looking at, is it the man or woman, and who we need to hire at the end, but at least bring in you know, a diverse pool of candidates. So I think for certain situations it's really good, so people start to think differently. So to kickstart this change of the mindset is very important. Now, do we apply it throughout the entire process, and do we stick to it for years? It's not gonna probably stick, right?
I think from my perspective, it's a starting point,
right?
But, you know, we need to go beyond that starting point. It can't be a starting point all the time. But in your journey, how much was it you, and how much was it external? And what I mean is, I hear a lot of conversations that says, the external environment doesn't allow me, which is, there's an element of truth in there because of the bias, because of people looking at opportunities and so on and so forth. But in your trajectory, in your career, in your growth, which I recognize hasn't been easy, how much of it was you and what you did and what you owned?
So I actually think I want to go back to the mindset, because for me, having been living through my formative years in Sweden, where equality was just something you don't even talk about. I was never made aware that, you know, I should not be studying computer science because I'm a woman. I was never in a situation where I would feel, because I'm, you know, a woman, or I'm even not from that country, that I'm not allowed to do something or become someone. And this was super great kind of baseline for me to continue throughout my career, because I didn't question myself from a perspective of my gender or my background or my education or my age or my culture, anything like that. I was there as Jana. The only thing what I think I battled was if I get to this position, I have only a male role models. So how do I lead as a woman? So that was where I struggled. And how do I basically define what my management style is? Because I had no reference points. But being a woman, it never stopped me to raise a hand and say, like, yeah, I'm going to try that. Who's going to open office in Romania? And I'm like, yeah, let me do that.
That's fantastic, right? You fast forward till today, you are a successful, experienced, senior female decision maker, right? And you are doing good by giving back through She Loves Data, where you're bringing others and helping enable success of them. And at the same time, you know, you've got Miro. If you think about your scenario where you didn't have to think about, you know, that bias, because you say, hey, I'm equal, I can do it, I'm Jana, I'm equal. There's also an element of courage, the courage to take on bigger roles, move to another country, right?
Oh, that's scary.
Recognizing you might fail, right? And that might impact your reputation, your trajectory, and so on and so forth. What advice would you give, you know, given where you are today, to others? And when I say others, I'm saying broadly speaking, obviously we're talking about, you know, the female gender, but just generally in terms of how they can overcome their fear, how they can overcome prejudices that might exist within the environments they operate. What can they do, or should they do?
So when I'm talking to the women in the She Loves Data community, and I mentor quite a few, you know, in a long term or ad hoc mentoring, I often hear that there is a certain kind of mindset how their career should look like based on what their study, based on what sometimes even their society is expecting them to become. And I think it's important to go back and say, what do I want? Where do I excel? Where my passion is? Because if I do something with a passion, it's going to be easy to excel. And we often forget to ask ourselves, and especially women, because there are certain structures that we should follow, and we don't think outside of those structures too often. Because it's unknown, and stepping into unknown, it's scary. So the courage, it's okay to fail. And as well, I think, do not think linear. It's okay to, you know, go in cycles. We need those not perfect careers that are straight, you know, from this university through, you know, those ranks, and this is it. We have to say it's okay to accept careers where you started something, then you found a passion here, then you, you know, went and took time off, you took sabbatical, or you took care of your kids and family for a while, and then you go back to some position that is not even linked to whatever you did before, because you maybe find your passion somewhere else. And I think this is as well becoming much more acceptable. And we need to showcase those type of leaders that made it up there in a not so straight way.
And I think that's something we all need to get comfortable with, the fact that growth is not linear, and sometimes you will need to take different paths to getting to where you are. But also knowing who you are. So self-awareness, you know, just listening to you, self-awareness clearly was a big theme for you in order for you to know who the authentic Jana is, which I think is pretty amazing. And I, I think that whole concept of self-awareness at an individual level is an important starting point on a long-term growth path, on a long-term growth journey for anyone.
Very true.
And how do you think about the organizational piece? So when we think about gender diversity within an organization, all right, you know, the data shows that, you know, we are lagging behind in APAC. We're making good progress in some instances versus others. The business case for gender diversity, honestly, is very strong because one of the biggest emerging groups of consumers globally are females.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to build an organization as well that models the consumers or the customers that you are selling to or the customers that you are engaging with, right? So how do you think what do organizations need to do to go beyond tokenism, the starting point, in order for gender diversity to genuinely grow and thrive in an organization?
I think even in an organization, you need to start from the individuals. So it is about checking our own, as a leaders, our own biases and be open about them, discuss them, point them out to others and support the diversity, gender diversity or any type of diversity in the organizations by actually showcasing personally that this is not an organizational tick in the box. Mm-hmm. But this is something that we mean seriously. And meaning it seriously, it means that we need to change and support the change of the mindset of our organization mm-hmm. as a whole, our workforce. And it as well means that we need to change processes. Mm-hmm. And often we talk about the hiring processes, mm-hmm. how we need to get the pipeline to get more, you know, female talent in. But we don't continue so often to say we need to as well retain the talent mm. and we need to create opportunities for this talent to come back after taking the breaks mm. and how do we basically enable the today almost broken pipeline mm. Of the female talent to go through various different stages of their careers so they can make it up to the top management, because we talk about really scary low number of female leaders mm. in our C-suite, and we are both working in tech. Mm. What was interesting for me was that I always thought it was like when I started, we were like 5 women and, you know, 40 men in the university, you know, on a computer science degree. Now it is about 40-45% of females mm. that are studying, you know, STEM. Mm. And still within 8 years, I think I read it's 8 or 10 years, 80% of them disappear from the pipeline of women moving on their careers.
Yeah.
And I think this is what we need to look at. How do we, okay, allow them to take a break, mm. whatever, you know, caring for aging parents, kids, you know, taking care of families, but how do we change our processes so that they are encouraged to come back? Mm. And I think upskilling is a big thing for bringing in more females. I read a very interesting article about a female professional who studied STEM, computer science. She worked for 6 years, went back, had family, stayed at home for not too long, mm. you know, 2 years. Mm. And she found that in those 2 years, the digital revolution, technical revolution moved on so much that she was terrified to come back and go back to a tech role. Mm. And I think this is so important. What do we do to inspire and motivate these women that are ready to come back, but they feel kind of obsolete mm. in their knowledge. Mm. So they often take different positions mm. and they often kind of almost give up mm. because there is no a process to take them through the kind of career development and support which they need. Because it's true, the technical and digital revolution is here, and you know what used to be 10 years is today 1 month, you know, in terms of the evolution. So how do we help our workforce? And this is not only women, anyone, to actually, you know, being in a positions where we need them as a organizational leaders, so that they feel comfortable to come back and say, like, I'm here, I'm ready to learn. What is it?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of process you can put me through?
Yeah. And you know, when you think about diversity in the broader sense, right, it becomes really imperative for us to embrace diversity of gender, thought, skills, perspectives, culture. That becomes super important. One of the things I'm really proud of is our organization at Autodesk, 50% of our board of directors are female, 45% of our executive team are female.
And so does it feel different?
It feels
to
very
be
different.
Part of
and that's exactly it, right? Mm. And not only it's not even I've met some of them in our board, and they are some of the smartest, brightest individuals I've met. So it's not a tokenism thing. It's not a tick in the box. These are genuinely smart, driven people with great experiences and a track record who are cutting edge leading thinkers, you know, who will sit and help us navigate this changing, constantly changing landscape to genuinely allow us to kind of live our vision and go towards the mission, right? Which is to, you know, empower innovators around the world to create and design a different world, a better world. So it's really exciting when you start to turn around and see the influence they have on the direction and trajectory of the company over time, right? Nothing happens overnight, but over time. And I think it starts with the top from a leadership standpoint, our CEO, and then it trickles down, right? And that is the other thing, right? So I want to talk about a little bit about bias in an organization. You've worked with many senior leaders, and you till today you engage, you know, in your capacity as in She Loves Data and in Miro. What kind of biases do you see in organizations that you think are impeding the progress of gender diversity within an organization that concerns you?
Look, I think we all have seen it, that we usually tend to hire people that are similar to us. And, you know, and this is the chicken and egg. You know, if we have in a certain industries or in a certain level of leadership or management, if we have one group that is represented as a majority, we will see that the new candidates will be similar to that group. And to be honest, you know, at a certain point at Meiro, I was leading a team, or I'm still leading a team of data analysts. And because of She Loves Data, I listened to various different stories of women that want to move to tech and data. Through internships, we do that. And at a certain point, I had 100% female data team.
No diversity.
Exactly. That's what people told me. Like, and I have to say that for me, it was very interesting that they told me, like, you are lacking gender diversity here. And then I could go back and say, like, well, it's true. You know, a gender is not here, but look at the group. We had a person from, I think, 6 different countries. One was a business major. Another one was finance analyst. Another one was accountant turned data analyst. They were various different ages, religions, you know, very diverse group, but
broad diversity.
Broader,
right?
Diversity, not the gender diversity. And I realized, why I'm hiring those female, you know, because I had a quite diverse pool of candidates, was that there were a different attributes I looked at throughout the hiring process. And now this might be like a positive bias to get more females in, but it is a bias because I ask them different questions than I ask the male candidates. So I would ask them and verify their loyalty or ask them about the passion. Or I didn't ask them to rate themselves 1 to 10, you know, on a certain skill set, but which we normally do. And females, they rate themselves lower on the same skill set level like the males. So I would change that and I said, like, tell me what you know in this particular area. And then I would do my ranking 1 to 10. And just changing that really changed, you know, our pool of data analysts. But it's true that I consciously or unconsciously was, you know, acting differently. And I had to go back and be a little bit more fair to our male candidates in a certain point. It was really interesting a process for me. So I think we need to test our own intentions. And we need to see, like, am I hiring someone who, you know, I hire because I can understand this person, because this person thinks like me, goes through the same hurdle like me, knows the same similar stuff like me. And I think this is important. But I have to say that I was in a situation, and it's not nice to realize that maybe I had a bias against some females. You know, you have to have it tough as well.
Wow.
And those are the unconscious biases that we need to kind of uncover.
So, Yana, you make a great point on bias. And, you know, I like the fact that you start with the individual, because it's people that make up organizations, right? So it's people at an individual level recognizing what their biases are, right? And if they don't, then, you know, it becomes a problem. And that's not just at the lowest rung or middle management or any hiring manager, but even going all the way up to the top. And I think the bias and understanding conscious and unconscious bias starts at the top. But, you know, when you think about bias, it's kind of subjective, right? You know, you can say I'm biased in a certain way based on your perspective or experience of me, and I can say the same of you. But the best way, in my opinion, to kind of objectify bias is through data, right? I know you love data. I don't love data very much. I actually love insights more, you know, because to me, a number is a number is a number, right? But what I like is what you get out of that number that allows you to take conscious action, right? Do you think there's enough in you're right in the heart of this with Mero and She Loves Data? Do you think organizations are using data in the way it needs to get used so that they can make more informed decisions and understand what their potential biases are?
To be honest, I am not sure. What I see that there are more and more studies and surveys that uncover, you know, all those biases and the situation. And I think that with the data, it's as well one important thing we need to say is it depends what you benchmark it against. So I think with the data, we are much more conscious about talking about the biases, talking about the numbers, looking where we came from, you know, in the last decade, let's say. And we see that there is a change, there is a positive curve. And I'm very happy to see that I read this article about this year's percentage of the Fortune 500 CEOs is 8.1%. And when you see this number, you're like, it's so low.
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's tiny. It's scary. And it was a article that celebrated this number. And what I mean is you need to go back and see what was the number in the last few years. The number was even lower. So today's, I believe, 43 CEOs in a Fortune 500. And it used to be around, you know, between 20, 25. So yes, we are making progress and the data shows that, but we need to look at it in a context. And I think the data as well, I think shows us, you know, how do we measure ourselves and how do we measure our performance as a individuals, but as an organization. And I think with, gender diversity and the value or diversity that brings to us as a, you know, leaders and organizations is that we should look at other styles of measurements. How do we measure success is hopefully changing as well, because we cannot just expect to be making more money for the next, I don't know, 100 years. So it's more about what does it mean for quality of our lives? What does it mean for our mental health? How do people feel working for our organization? So it goes back to different types of measurements and as well for the values we represent working for a certain organization. So the value system.
I completely agree, because, you know, we can't just measure success single dimensionally, revenue, profitability and stuff. You know, there are other aspects that we need to measure success in, because this diversity piece is so important as well, because it also allows us to make sure that we are building an organization that reflects the customers we serve,
yeah,
or the customers we sell to. But coming to the point back on data, I had an experience at some point in my career, I won't tell you when, where, you know, there was a roll-up of my organization into me, and in the roll-up, you know, I my HR partner and I were looking at different dimensions of the roll-up, right? Different KPIs and so on, just to see, hey, how does the data overall look? And one dimension we saw was diversity, gender, mm-hmm, right? And when we looked at the diversity piece, and we suddenly realized that there was a higher percentage of males in terms of the race they were getting versus the females. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's interesting. Why would that be the case? You know, so, you know, I got curious, and we sat down and said, yeah, fair point. And she and I sat down and we went through the entire organization, and we started to unpack that a little bit to find out, where is this happening? At what level was it happening? And it's definitely unconscious, because these are good people. These are not people going, sure, out there to do this on purpose. So it allowed us to then sit down and think, okay, how do we make the adjustments? How do we bring this to light? And what do we do
to raise
awareness and prevent it in the future?
So what did you do?
So we had to educate. It started with education, right? The first thing is, people don't know what they don't know. Mm. Right? So me as a leader, I had to make sure I drive the conversation, because if I kind of took my attention off this, it might happen again, right? In different dimensions, you got new people coming to the organization, organizations evolving. So I think that the whole concept of data and the usage of data becomes super important in organization, not just in terms of drive business performance, but in terms of drive organizational development as well.
Right. True.
And I think more and more we need to encourage that culture where data drives insights, and insights allows you to take action that can actually make fundamental shifts in how you develop, grow, and improve the performance of your organization. So I think the data piece is going to be super key in how we slowly start to raise conscious levels of bias and what you call overcome it. Now, in many interactions that I've had questions that come to me that says, I work for an organization where the leader doesn't necessarily believe in gender diversity, or it's not a priority. What advice would you give, you know, to employees in an organization like that, dealing with a leader that just doesn't see it? What should they do?
So I think it's about raising awareness and showcasing that with diverse group, the results are better. Mm. There are many studies right now that showcase that if you have more women, you innovate differently. You lower risks for failures or for, you know, organizations actually running into situations that lower the profitabilities and lower revenues. You have a different creativity on board. And I think bringing those examples, bringing data with it, is actually, you know, the starting point. And I think as well, it's the testing the leader's ability to really see what values you represent.
One observation I've had is, you know, when organizations have women or the minority gen, you know, trying to drive and effect change, sometimes it's like swimming upstream. And one thing I've seen work really well, when they start to build allyship, when they start to get male champions of change, you know, and I use the word male champions of change deliberately, because it is an opportunity for the other gender to come out and say, hey, this is important. You guys need to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And sometimes addressing the problem with a subset of people who are the problem, you know, could be an effective way to start that process of a dialogue, to start that process of awareness, of education, to effect change. You know, why do we not have enough or more male champions of change in organizations?
You tell me.
We do. I don't have that problem in Autodesk. Well, it's work in progress, in the sense that we can always do better. right? And we always can get better. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, personally, I play an active role in the women in leadership areas, women in sales, you know, and Autodesk Women's Network and so on and so forth. Because genuinely, I believe it starts with me. It starts Absolutely. And stops with me. So I need to be, to your point, that role model, right? I need to turn around and make sure I raise awareness of the bias that potentially is there. I need to make sure that, you know, we have the right processes that can support very proactive, very conscious, very deliberate ways of how we ensure we can attract women into our organization, you know, with regards to how we showcase our culture and the psychological safety that exists within our culture for everyone to thrive, not just women, yeah. you know, for everyone to thrive.
So how did you start? Because you must have, there must have been some turning point. And how do you explain this to your male colleagues who maybe do not have daughters, because the daughters make them a bit more aware of the situation? So how do you win them over to be the male champion of change?
You know, it's not one thing that happens overnight.
Exactly.
You know, so there's no magic trick. It depends on circumstance, context. It depends on the environment. And obviously, it's a combination of the things we've talked about. You know, I had to educate myself as a starting point. You know, I needed to read. I needed to speak to different people. I'm curious, so that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. At the same time, and I guess, you know, over time that passion grew, because even from a business case standpoint, as an organization, you know, we need to reflect the customers we serve. We need to reflect the variety of people who use the end products yeah. of what our customers build with our technology, right? And we need to understand them. And as a result, if we don't have diversity in the organization, then we will not be able to turn around and understand and recognize our blind spots or remove bias from the way we develop, in the way we interact, in the way we engage, in the way we think about strategy, in where we invest and where we don't invest. So for me, it's been a journey over time. Mm-hmm. And as a result now, I think I've seen the impact, I've seen the value, and I'm an advocate. You know, I'm an ally, I'm a champion of change, I'm an advocate, and I definitely want to do more. You know, so I'm going to do my part, but we need more.
Yeah.
You know, it's been fantastic talking to you. You know, I love the insights and perspectives that you brought to the table across multiple facets.
We touched quite a lot.
It's a complex, it's a big topic, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if there's a right or wrong, but I do know it's an imperative for all of us, you know, yeah. As leaders and for all organizations. Any closing words for our viewers from your end?
I think as important as walk the talk, you know, be the agent of change. I really like this expression, because if we call it ally or sponsor, it doesn't necessarily mean that you actively, you know, participate in a change, and we need the change. It is about starting with yourself, because we as individuals, we have to look at our unconscious biases and be very honest to ourselves about that. And then I think as organizations, what I really like is we should look at, what do we represent? What are the values that we stand for? Because the values are so much linked with the results that we are then demonstrating, that we need to focus on different values to thrive as individuals, as organizations, and that not only the revenue, profitability, but the common togetherness mm-hmm. is important to build for the, you know, greater good almost.
Thanks, Jana. That was a great way to turn around and summarize for the greater good. Thank you very much. So we all come from different places, but we're all connected by humanity. And that's something I've realized a long time ago, you know, regardless of gender, regardless of culture, race, religion, the world we live in is changing fundamentally, and it's changing really quickly. It's really important that we embrace diversity and gender diversity to ensure that all of us have an equal opportunity to learn, to grow, to thrive in a technology-driven disruption world. And for me, it's going to be an important aspect of how organizations shift or repivot to basically ensure that they have the diversity to serve the customers that use their products, to have diversity to ensure innovation in how the products get built, and to have diversity to influence how they think about the future of the organization. Ultimately, all organizations are made up of people. And so it starts with us as individuals to understand what our biases are. Use data to help us get educated. Use data to help us get educated and uncover what those biases are so that we can ensure we build a better, stronger platform where everyone can thrive. This is Impact Matters. I hope you enjoyed the session. My name is Haresh Kupchandani. I am a male champion of change for gender diversity. Thank you for being with us today.